I want to laugh super hard at that video, but I have been there before, where you're going to make this great thing happen, everything's going to be so awesome, and then the problems start. I'm reading this novel right now. It's a murder mystery, and the detective is going around trying to find these clues and the evidence, and he's in this house, and he's walking through this house looking for evidence, and there's this huge mirror, and he notices on the mirror there's a small little sticker on the mirror. That's all there is, just a small little sticker. And he looks at it. As he gets closer, there's something written on it. He can just barely see it, but there's something written on this sticker. And as he gets as close as he can to read this sticker, it says, "You're looking at the problem." And I thought, I understand. Oftentimes when I'm trying to have the best year ever, the problem's me. I'm the obstacle. Maybe you can relate. You come tearing down towards the ring, and before you even get there. January can look a lot like that wrestling clip sometimes. And we're trying to have the best year ever. Last week we did a few practical steps, and like what would the best year look like ever. And we talked about these things. We said, number one, that you can be cleansed, that you don't have to be on the guilt trip, you can be forgiven. And that sometimes even after you're forgiven, there's like this aftershock or this tremor that you have to be cleansed from. We also talked about you can pursue a goal. And so it's silly not to have one. It's ridiculous to not have a goal in your life. And one of the best ways to do it is to talk to God about it, because who knows us better? I mean, he knows our past and what I'm going through. He knows what's coming at me. So to just take a moment and talk to God and say, what's our goal this year? Also, you can start a habit, that they're a process, that they can be repeated. You can replace bad habits with good habits. All habits have sort of a similar structure to them. And then we also talked about pointing people to God. What does that look like? The people in our lives that are far away, how would we point them? Now, if you missed the talk or you want to review, you can always go to the app and download those. So if you just jump on one of the stores and type in Eastlake Church, and then you're going to say Eastlake Church, Utah, you can download the app. There's music, and you can donate there. But all the talks are there, okay? So you can grab the app anytime you want. It's free, and tell you what's going on. Last week, here's basically what we said. When you partner with Jesus, you can do things that you can't do by yourselves. Now this week, we're going to talk about when we partner with each other. When you're part of a church community, you can do things you can't do by yourselves. Here's our theme verse. Let me read it to you. It's in your notes. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone. The new is here. So the uniqueness about our gathering is that, you know, we believe that Jesus is a part of our life, and he helps us get through things. There's a partnership that happens. Now here's the big idea, write it down. Jesus empowers us to be a church for everyone. So really what we're saying, best year ever, it's kind of one part Jesus, one part people. If you were making a drink, that's what it would look like. One part Jesus, one part people. Here's the Jesus part. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Christ is also head of the church. And when it comes to the church, he organizes and holds it together like a head does a body. Now here's the people part. Let us be concerned for one another, to help one another show love and to do good. Let us not give up the habit of meeting together as some are doing. Instead, let us encourage one another all the more, since you see that the day of the Lord is coming near. So this idea of a church here, everyone, how come? Well, here's the truth. Not everyone would even believe that they could belong or be a part of a church like this. Not everyone would even think it would be okay for them to be here. Not everyone knows how to take the first step towards God. Not everyone believes that they would even be welcomed. And a church for everyone is a place where two things happen. The very first one, write in your notes. Outward focus. There's like two focuses that a church for everyone has. The first one is outward focus. So we are Christ's official messengers, and as if God were making his appeal through us. Here is what Christ wants us to beg you to do. Come back to God. Gosh, there's so many people that have a ton of misconceptions about how God feels about them, what it would be like to be at a church service like this. And oftentimes it's because they've had some sort of religious experience. or they've ran into somebody from religion, or they have something from their background, or they picked up something, and now they feel like an outsider. And it used to be that when people thought about moving towards God, they would look towards church. It was kind of the natural. You know, you want a pizza, you call a pizza parlor. You want to move towards God, you go to church. You move towards church, but it's not that way anymore. Very difficult for people to think that church... In fact, in our nation now, people aren't looking at church as a way to find God. And a church for everyone has to figure out a way to respond to it. And here's kind of what it looks like. I brought this example today. You know, I think a lot of people, here's how they kind of see it. You know, they think God's way up there and they got to try to get to him somehow. And so if this church were a ladder, like they're going to help me get to God. And like say they take the first step, they're going to kind of go towards God. They take this very first step right here. But here's what happens a lot of times at church. You all these rungs, it looks like you could get there. But somebody in the church or somehow the message of the church is they remove one of the rungs right away. And here's what they say about this one. They say, hey, listen, you know, before you can be in the church, you got to make a lot of changes in your life. I mean, you just can't come walking in here smoking. When I was a kid, they used to say, don't smoke, chew, or run around with girls that do. I used to think to myself, well, who are my friends going to be then? You know, but, I mean, you got a lot of changes you got to look at. And do you even have church clothes? Obviously not. You can't just walk into church. You can't be a part of church. We're holy. You can't just come in here. There's some changes you got to make. There's some adjustments you got to make. There's some habits you got to give up. There's some things you got to do before you can just think you can go to church. And so that is the message, by the way. Don't think it isn't. That is the perception. And so they take a look at it, and it's like, well, how do I even, like, get past the first step? Now, here's the next step, and this is really prevalent today. Here's the next step. You'd like them to be able to step here, but they can't step here because in this rung, this is what the church is saying. You have to believe everything we believe. If you want to belong with us, you got to believe the things that we believe. You don't even really have to think anymore. We'll tell you what to think. And how to think. We'll tell you what to believe. We'll tell you what's right and wrong. We'll sort of publish it. And you'll know by the rejection level if you're on target. So don't worry about what you used to believe or what you think you could believe. Don't worry about that. We'll take care of that. If you want to be with us, you have to believe what we believe. And so people that have been through science and they're wondering where evolution fits in and same-sex marriage and all the social issues and, you know, they just take a glance at church and said, well, they probably don't line up with any of these things. And so they look and they go, how would I even take a step? And here's one of the ones right here. This is a really good one. Here's one right here. Is that this step right here, here's kind of the message about religion and church this day. You know what? The reason we do all those things is because someday we're going to go to heaven. I mean, that's the whole point of this thing anyways, is someday we're going to go to heaven and we're going to eat grapes on a cloud. And we're going to have, you know, everything perfect up there. Someday when we get to heaven, it's not like we really even like this stuff. We're just grinding it out till we get to heaven someday. And there's that message. It's like there's no hope for today. You just work your ass off so you can go to heaven, your butt off so you can go to heaven someday. Sorry. Because you're hoping if you can just eke by somehow. Could I just get a C minus? Because I know where D's and F's go. And you know, that's what it looks like. People on the outside, outsiders, that's what the church looks like today, right there. Would you try to climb that ladder? Would you use that to change a light bulb? Would you even approach it? I invite people to church all the time. So I understand the problem. And here's kind of how I approach it. I don't even really think about it like church anymore. Like when I'm with people now, here's how I approach the problem. I look at it sort of like I'm a matchmaker, and I've done this lots of times, so just hear me out. Let's say that I have a friend that went through a really rough divorce 2 or 3 years ago, and he's hurt and banged up, and he's having difficulty getting traction again, and he doesn't even want to date anybody. Then when he does, it's a disaster, and he's having problems with his kids, and finances are a mess, and you know, a couple, 2, 3 years go by, and he's just not moving forward. This thing just really took the wind out of his sails, and I know a girl. Single girl. And I'm thinking to myself, man, this girl would be perfect for my dude. I mean, if I could just, you know, and so here's what I do. I say, you know what? I'm going to invite them to the same event. You probably have had this thought before. If I could just get them in the same room together. So maybe I'll throw a party or whatever it is, but I'm just thinking in my mind, if I can just get these two people in the same room together, sure, I'm hoping they meet each other and they rub shoulders, but you know, if I can just get them in the same room together, and then from there, it's up to them. You know, that's how I look at church. If I can just get them into the same room as Jesus. If I could just get them to attend one time something and get them in the exact same room as Jesus, and you might be thinking, Robin, are you saying you're a matchmaker? Yes. Yes, I am. A match made in heaven. I'm trying to get people into the same room with Jesus because I believe that if I can get them in the same... Do you know what? I believe if I can just get them in the same room at Eastlake, that Jesus will win them. So, now here's what I think can happen, and you can take some notes on. The first one is acceptance. I really do believe that a church for everyone can accept one another. Because acceptance isn't based on agreement or approval. It's something much greater. It's on a foundation of love. I like what Rick Warren said. I posted this on my Facebook. I thought Dave Chappelle said it, so my bad. I put his face up there and everything like a geek. But actually, our team researched it, and they found out it was Rick Warren who said it, which is like the person that started all the churches like the East Lakes. And so here's what Rick Warren says about acceptance. Our culture has accepted two huge lies. The first is if you disagree with someone's lifestyle, you must fear or hate them. The second is to love someone means you agree with everything they believe or do. Both are nonsense. You don't have to compromise convictions to be compassionate. And they spelled two wrong, but blame that on Dave Chappelle for you anal people who saw it. But here's the point. One of the greatest demonstrations of God's power is being able to be in a room together and accept each other when we don't agree on everything. When we don't have to approve of everything. Here's what it kind of looks like. Last week I got up in the morning and it said it was going to snow, and I went to bed and it wasn't snowing. So it's Saturday night. We got to come here and set up the whole church. I'm hoping it doesn't snow. And I get up Sunday morning. It's like 6 o'clock and it is just a blizzard outside. Just pounding. And there's already snow everywhere all over the ground, and it is hard to set up this church when it's snowing, pull the trailers down here, shovel everything. And so I immediately start grumbling. Like, why is it got to snow, God? You're supposed to be super powerful. It's like, I hate doing this in the snow. It's just like grumbling, whining and everything. I'm just walking around the house. I'm not even getting dressed. I'm like, I don't. How can we care of a building like other churches? This is so stupid. You know, I'm just whining. And then finally I just realized, as I looked outside, oh, it's still snowing. And my whining and complaining and not accepting it didn't change anything. So I finally had to say to myself, get your boots on. It's snowing. Accept it. And do you know relationships are no different? You won't get traction with anyone until you accept who they are. Not who you want them to be. Not who they even hope to be. If it's snowing, it's snowing. And the sooner you accept it, the sooner you can get moving. Now, Church for Everyone, what we're trying to do is put the rung back in. Our whole goal is that by accepting, we can put a step in. Now, here's the next one. It's mercy. Let me put this one in here. Mercy means it's not based on believing the same things. It's not based on how we perform. It's based on mercy that we can be together in a church for everyone. That means everybody can come in. Let me read you something. When a Michigan deer hunter found a 100-pound buck struggling to get free of a mud bog in which it was hopelessly stuck, the hunter couldn't bring himself to squeeze the trigger. Instead, he and his hunting partner snared the animal with a rope and pulled it out of the mud, and the deer then bolted to freedom. The hunter later recalled, "When you see a deer like that, eyeball to eyeball, it's a little different. I think the eyes did it. That longing look as if to say, what are you going to do?" You know, one of the reasons it's so important for us to be open and honest so we can look each other in the eye and say, I'd rather give you mercy. I see what you're going through. I see how your background has set you up for this. I see the struggle that you're in. I would rather than try to get you to believe what I believe or you know, give you a speech or tell you what you should have done. See, you know, mercy is when I don't get what I deserve. So all the great proverbs, you made your bed, now you have to sleep in it. You have to pay the consequences. I understand there's a place for those, but a church for everyone believes in mercy. That sometimes you don't get what you deserve. And sometimes you're, this last week, I pulled the trigger. I had somebody in my sights. It was a part of a business thing, and I caught them red-handed, and other people saw it too, and we knew they had done something really super bad, and there was a chance to embarrass them and really take them a few notches down. I had a grudge against them anyways. I had them right in my sights just like this, and I pulled the trigger. I just blasted them, embarrassed them, got them in trouble. I had an opportunity, and I thought to myself, they deserve this. Who needs mercy in your life? They'll never receive it if they have to earn it. By its very nature, it's unearned. A church for everyone? I had to go back to that guy and just tell him, you know what? I'm sorry. I went back a couple days later. It took 2 full days to get the guts up. I went into his office. I sat down. I looked him in the eye and I said, I'm sorry. I had a chance to show you mercy. And I decided to knock you on your butt instead. We're trying to put a rung back in so people don't have to make a checklist of who they are and what they've done. They can just say, whew. Now write the word hope in. It's the last thing. And it's this last little, I'm not saying there's not a heaven. You can read the Bible and try to figure out what you think it's like. I'm sure it's going to be a great place. I know it's going to be a great place. And at some point that's going to come into play. But we need hope when we hate our boss. We need hope when we're fighting with our wife. We need hope when our kids are unmanageable. We need hope when, you know, what we were so hoping would occur doesn't occur. Present day hope. You know what I think Christians can kind of be like as people watch us? By the way, it's like being willing to put your stuff out there a little bit with people so they can see your life, that creates hope for them. It's like those, you know, you're watching TV at nighttime, they have all the diet shows and they show you the before and after. They got some person that's got all the weight on still, you know, some dude, you know, they show him with no shirt on. It's like, how much did they pay that guy? You know, and he's like, here he is, you know. And then they show you that's the before. And then there's the after one where some skinny guy's there and he's got his pants out to like here. And, you know, it's like after the diet type thing. I think our lives are kind of like that for people. There's the before me. I don't like to, you know, tell people my mistakes and show my stuff. One of the even reasons I'd even do it up here is I don't like that. I'd rather say, I had a chance to shoot that guy and I didn't. I was just like the hunter from Michigan. Yay, me. And sometimes I do. But that's not the whole story. The whole story is sometimes I don't. Yet I have hope. I can turn to someone and say, dang it, I don't. And then the still small voice says, well, go tell him you're sorry and move on. You're like, oh boy, where do I get the power to do that? Our hope that we're offering people is a present day hope. We're saying to them that, yeah, you're going to go through some stuff and you'll win some and you'll lose some, but you'll have a very present hope. Now, what if the church looks like that? Where people could look at it, and if they tried to get God, they could at least say, well, there's some steps there. Now, here's, I think, what the problem can be sometimes, especially a church like ours, where most of us hardly were walking with God before we got together. So we're just getting started. It's like, well, I don't know the Bible well enough. And, you know, what are people going to think of me? And have you ever felt this way when you're thinking you're going to, like, put yourself out there for others and Jesus and point them towards God? You know, oh, he says I'm supposed to. And the feeling is, you know, sort of like this. You're kind of like this. You're like, hey, I'm having a hard enough time just climbing the ladder myself. I can't, like, reach down and get anybody else. I mean, I'm just barely able to get, I barely can stay on the ladder. Listen to this. It'll come up behind us. I want you to hear this promise. This is Jesus. For I am the Lord your God who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not fear. I will help you. What if being someone that is outward focused looks like this? You're here, and he's got this hand, and you're offering this hand. And when it's hard to accept him, he stabilizes you. When you got no mercy, he gives you mercy. When you have no hope, he shows you hope. What if he's got this hand? And this hand is free. And yes, this is what a church looks like. And if he doesn't have your hand, you can't extend your hand. At some point, and this may mean you here today because you're kind of at that place in your walk with God, you've got to stop climbing like this. Just holding it with all your might. You got to understand that if you could put your hand up and let him take it, you can reach for someone. Because best year ever will include outward focus. Now the next one, inward focus. Here's what it says. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I made plans like a child. When I became a man, I stopped those childish ways. It is the same with us. So you probably know this by now. You don't become an adult by just having a lot of birthdays. You don't become mature by just having a lot of birthday parties. When is the last time you thought to yourself, it was something happened in your life, you made some kind of mistake, and you just thought to yourself, gosh, I've been doing this ever since I was a kid. I've never got past this. Now, I brought a little diagram I want to throw up behind me, and you can put the word in your notes. What's the difference between childish and adult? You know, in life, there's events, and then the middle ground is where we find out if we're a kid or an adult. Adult thinking, adult, you know, moving through life as an adult is how we interpret the events. Events keep coming at you. They come at children, they come at adults. The question is, how am I going to interpret them? Because that's going to cause me to make my choice. And here's the thing, we live in our choices. There's a woman, her name is Emily Smith, and she wrote a really cool book. She's talking about these different pillars of life, but she's talking about interpretation like it's a story, that we all bring our story to the table, and then an event hits us, and we make an interpretation and then a choice. And she's got some good things to say about it. It's a couple of minutes, but I want you to check out her video, so check this out.
The fourth pillar is storytelling, the story you tell yourself about yourself. Creating a narrative from the events of your life brings clarity. It helps you understand how you became you. But we don't always realize that we're the authors of our stories and can change the way we're telling them. Your life isn't just a list of events. You can edit, interpret, and retell your story even as you're constrained by the facts. I met a young man named Emeka who'd been paralyzed playing football. After his injury, Emeka told himself, "My life was great playing football, but now, look at me." People who tell stories like this, "My life was good, now it's bad," they tend to be more anxious and depressed. And that was Emeka for a while. But with time, he started to weave a different story. His new story was, "Before my injury, my life was purposeless. I partied a lot and was a pretty selfish guy. But my injury made me realize I could be a better man." That edit to his story changed Emeka's life. After telling the new story to himself, Emeka started mentoring kids, and he discovered what his purpose was: serving others. The psychologist Dan McAdams calls this a redemptive story, where the bad is redeemed by the good. People leading meaningful lives, he's found, they tend to tell stories about their lives defined by redemption, growth, and love.
Says about you're the author of your own story, but I would like to offer this. What if we're the co-author of our own story? Because God is writing a story too about our life. It's when they come together in a partnership that we can make the right interpretation. Events are going to keep coming at you, you guys. People are going to get cancer. Financial problems are going to come. You're going to get a promotion you never thought you would have got. Someone's going to break up with you, and then somebody else is going to come along. You're going to have a million bad hair days. I mean, they're just going to come. That's life. How you interpret the events. And I'd like to suggest that to interpret them on your own, you'll write some stories that are pretty crazy, and you'll live in those choices. See, on the inside, to make a change on the inside, to be inside focused, is to understand in 2019, as the events hit you, you can co-author the interpretation. And that'll lead to a certain choice. Best year ever? Co-author a book with God about your life. The events will, you don't have to create any momentum for them. They are on the way. How will they be interpreted is the question. Now, the bottom line, and write down, the outward focus keeps our inward focus healthy. Why is that? Why is it that to be healthy on the inside, I need to first look on the outside? Because if I start on the inside, I become self-obsessed. And you can dig and scrub and be focused on yourself. And the more you do it, the more you'll be focused on yourself and the more you will see. But when you start on the outside, other people, what's going on in their life? Do you know a lot of growth happens when you're right here and you're trying to reach for someone and you're shaky and you reach up and you take his hand and you think all you're doing is reaching for someone else, but actually you're being transformed. You're learning to trust and see things differently. You're growing in acceptance and mercy and help. Now here's how the Bible describes it. It's the last thing we'll read together. The same good news that came to you is going out all over the world. It is bearing fruit everywhere by changing lives outside, just as it changed your lives inside from the day you first heard and understood the truth about God's wonderful grace. So best year ever, two focuses, church for everyone, outside, hoping to look just like this. Inside, reaching for them as we reach for him.